And he did a talk about how he designed this arm and so on. And so I distinctly remember that. And I then remember hearing on John Craven's news round at the time that they had indeed discovered evidence for bacteria in the soil of Mars. And then about a year later, they said, no, it was a mistake. There weren't any microbes. It was actually to do with the chemistry that was used in the experiment. And, you know, the chemistry was wrong. And we didn't detect microbes after all. Again, the news doesn't tell you the truth. It doesn't give you the full story. On 28th of July 2001, Space.com reported that several scientists have found compelling evidence that the Viking Mars landers did indeed discover life on the red planet in 1976. A re-examination of findings relayed to Earth by the probes some 25 years ago claim the experts show the telltale signs of microbes lurking within the Martian soil. This is a key part. The inventor of the labelled release experiment, which I'll talk a bit more about in a minute, Gilbert Levin, said the Viking LR experiment detected living microorganisms in the soil of Mars. He added that after years and years of tests and over two dozen non-biological explanations later, none of the many attempts to establish the oxidants mimicry of the LR data did so. What Gilbert Levin's experiment did was they got some dust from the Martian soil, they put it into this sort of chemical soup. The chemical soup, which had sugars in it, allowed bacteria in the soil to metabolise the sugars, which were laced with radioactive carbon, carbon-14, and they detected radiation being given off in the CO2. And that was the labelled release experiment. And the other life detection, we're going to hear more about this later on, actually, so I won't spend much time on it here. And so basically, he was convinced his experiment worked, but then NASA employed other people to debunk their own results. That's what they did. Richard Hoagland has claimed, and he's not the only person, by the way, that when the Viking lander first came down on the surface, and we're going to come back to this very sort of time, they showed that this, I think maybe if we could have the lights down for some of this, because some of the colours we're going to need to see here, we've got a bit of a sort of light screen here, they showed that this was actually more of a bluish colour, but then somebody came in to Mission Control, tweaked the knobs on the monitors, and they gave the sky this reddish appearance, right? So you can see here, it's not that clear on this, but we'll see it more clearly in later shots. Got a bluish sky here, and they said, oh no, that's not right, there's something wrong with that. And he reports this in his book, Mars, the Living Planet, which he wrote with Barry D. Gregorio, and you can get that on Amazon if you want to. And what we've got here is, this looks quite washed out on this projector, unfortunately, but this is actually a very blue sky. I've got some booklets, actually, as well, over there in the thing, and I've got some booklets on there, I've just got my laser pointer on it, which have got this picture in it. You can see it on my website as well, so you don't have to buy the booklets. But this is very clearly a blue sky, and the guy that created this picture, what he did was, this guy called Holger Isenberg, and you can go onto his website, he took the original Viking data, and as you may recall, or as you may know, the Viking images are actually taken, they have three black and white images. They're taken through a red filter, a green filter, and a blue filter. And then they recombine those images, it's actually a monochrome camera, and they create the colour image. Now, when you actually recombine those three colour images, and you use the correct filter specifications, it comes out as a blue sky. And I've seen four separate analyses, one of which is by Gilbert Levin and his son, Ron Levin. They've come out with the same result. Mars has a blue sky. No doubt about it. Now, and you're going to see how they've got away with saying it's a red sky. I'm going to play you a clip now, all being well. I hope the sound's rigged up.
And there's a piece of information coming in. Similar to the ones that we see in desert areas here. So it's
cold it may be, the secondary one is basaltic rocks, possibly volcanic rocks that have solidified a gas-charged environment, and then these gases produce vesicles or holes. Does look like a perfect set.
The first picture of the Martian panorama.
As you look at the field of view in general, I think the most striking impression is on a lot of rocks. And this automatically brings to mind the fact that we have a good deal of rock. Because some of these rocks are about 2-3 meters across. And had the spacecraft landed on those rocks, it would have been disabled, probably permanently disabled.
Later high-resolution pictures confirm the rocks were volcanic, but lying on dunes of fine sand. On the second day, the first pictures in color. Mars was indeed the red planet, or at any rate, blue-red. But the colors were false. It was noticed that one of the cables on the spacecraft wasn't orange enough. The color was correct, and Mars turned even redder. The reason for their mistake? The sky. Everyone had assumed it would be blue like on Earth. But on Mars, scattered dust turns the sky pink and makes sunset purple.
Now, you may have recognised the dulcet tones of William Franklin, the famous actor from the 1970s. That clip you saw was actually from a 1976 documentary, I think. Let me just go back a little bit. Yeah, I haven't quite got that right. It doesn't really matter. But that was from a 1976 documentary, or 1977 documentary with William Franklin. But it was repeated within a 2009 documentary. And the point that I'm making is, they said the colour of the cable was incorrect. Do you remember? In that clip it said, the colour of the cable on the lander was too orange. So they corrected it. They don't calibrate the colours on the Martian surface from a cable. And we can prove that that is untrue. These are the colour calibration charts on the Viking lander. They put them on the lander so that they could calibrate the colour images. The BBC is putting out false information. They deliberately falsified the colours. These are used to calibrate the colour on Mars. But they said it was a cable. That's extremely poor research which was done. If I can work out that's false, the BBC should be able to. And they repeated that error in 2009. So they have a history of falsification of the colours of the colour of the sky on Mars. Mars has a blue sky. It has a red surface, right enough, but just because we have, you know, the colour of the surface of the Earth doesn't dictate the colour of the sky. Over a forest, you don't have a green sky, do you? Or over a big football pitch, you don't have a green sky. The colour of the sky is dictated by the way that white light is scattered by small particles and gases that are in the atmosphere. Mars has a blue sky. Again, the blue is not coming out very well on this projector. I'm not sure why. This is blue. This is deep blue here. This should be blue. This is not red. And it's actually, this is an ESA picture from the Mars Express probe, which we'll mention a bit more about. So there's a history of them. You can clearly see, but this doesn't have sky in it, but it is reflecting the colour of the sky, which is blue. And here again, we've got colour problems with this image. This is where they're covering up the colours on Mars. Comparison between publicly accessible Mars Express images and those from Mars Global Surveyor. Mars Express is the European Mars probe, which is still orbiting Mars, went up in 2003. It had the ill-fated Beagle 2 lander attached to it, which crash-landed, apparently. So the one on the left has this sort of, is that algae, is it vegetation? But this is the Mars Global Surveyor image. Generally, the Mars Express images do seem to have better colour balance than the Mars Global Surveyor images, which tend to be all grey. And even with the Surveyor, the current Curiosity rover, you'll see a predominantly, if you go onto the NASA website and look at these pictures, you will see that even in this digital age of camera phones and advanced digital cameras that can do everything, you know, make the tea and everything, You're still getting black and white pictures from the Curiosity rover posted on the NASA website, primarily black and white. There's a few colour, but they're primarily black and white. Now we go back to the question of life on Mars again. We're going to go through a couple of instances of this. It was in July 2004, it was stated by Professor Vittorio Formisano that Mars Express, that's the European probe, instrumentation had detected ammonia, methane and even formaldehyde in the Martian atmosphere. These are so-called biomarker gases, indicating ongoing life processes. They come from living organisms. And formaldehyde is a particularly troublesome one because it has a very quick degradation time. It degrades within about 7 hours. Okay? So it means that if formaldehyde was in the atmosphere, it must be being reproduced regularly. In February 2005, Formisano said, "My observations should not be taken as a statement that there is life on Mars today, because we need to go there to drill the soil, take samples and analyse them, before possibly concluding that life is there." Oh really, Dr. Formisano? Well, isn't that what Viking and Dr. Levitin's labelled release experiment did 29 years earlier? Why had he forgotten about that? So his result corroborates Levin's, but because they declared that as being false, it's not mentioned. And they keep reporting the discovery on life, discovery of life on Mars about every 4 years. They did it in 2009, they've been doing it again recently, which I'll come back to. Methane on Mars again. That was 2004. Now we've got NASA. Methane clouds could be evidence of life on Mars. And that was in 2009, 5 years later. The Belfast Telegraph. Same story. Same story. Repeat of 1976, and they also keep discovering water on Mars as well. Liquid water has been discovered about 6 or 7 times, and they're claiming it as a new discovery, which we'll come to again. But then this is what you get, you see. They've also now just reproduced, on the same date NASA posted Martian methane reveals the red planet is not a dead planet. I'm getting this mixed up with the next slide. So this was on the 15th of January 2009. It's on NASA's website. Martian methane reveals the red planet is not a dead planet. That's on NASA's website, 2009. And now we've got it again. 4th of December 2012, 3 months ago or so. Wired magazine reports with a caveat. Curiosity rover detects water and organic compounds on Mars. The rover also detected its first organic compounds in the form of chlorinated methane created during the sampling analysis process within the sample analysis at Mars tool. Sounds similar to the labelled release if you ask me. However, while the chlorine is definitely from Mars, the carbon might be of more earthy origin carried to the planet by the rover. So, it's a bit like saying, yes, we've discovered there are rocks on Mars. We've just discovered there are rocks on Mars. We know there are rocks on Mars. We saw them in 1976. We've seen them in all kinds of pictures since the 60s. But then, they now debunk the methane reports. On 13th of December, the Discovery News reports, "Where's Mars's methane? Curiosity draws a blank." So you get conflicting reports. Which is it? I know which story I believe. Now, you see, the problem with this is, now for NASA, is that there are a lot of good amateur researchers out there. Okay, and they're doing things. NASA has got to post this data publicly. Some of it they cover up, which again I'll come back to, but a lot of it is posted publicly. And what you're going to see here is like a summary of what I've just told you about the labelled release, along with some pictures from Ron Bennett. I won't read out all the text.
"I believe that life can travel, and I think that maybe not intentional, but scientists painted the wrong picture of what happened. You know, the message was put out that Viking found nothing more than unusual active chemicals in the soil, that basically Mars was dead, and that had a profound effect on everything that's followed, including the direction of the whole space program. So the question is, where did things go wrong? Well, back in 76, two identical spacecraft, Viking 1 and 2, landed on Mars. They both carried miniature rival labs. And we're outside the microwave oven, it's quite small. But they had three experiments which were looking directly for life on Mars. And they were the first spacecraft to do this. And incredibly, the only spacecraft that had ever looked for life on another planet. You know, in the 30-odd years since then, we've never sent out another probe to look for life. And that's because the mainstream science said Viking didn't find anything. So, you know, they carried out some experiments. I just wanted to zero in a couple of them. One was called the label release experiment, one was called paralytic release. But, and the agreement was beforehand, if any of these experiments found a positive signal, then we would say that they found life on Mars, and that was thrown out the window later on. So what the label release experiment did was it took a sample of Martian solid, put some water onto it, some goodies, some nutrients, kind of like a chicken soup type of thing for bacteria, and the neat thing was that those nutrients were laced with radioactive carbon, and the hope was that any bugs in the soil would metabolize that food and then give off radioactive carbon dioxide, which you could then pick up with a, you know, radiation detector kind of counter. And lo and behold, that's exactly what it found. A big rush of radioactive carbon dioxide, which lasted for about 3 days. Exactly what you'd expect if there were bacteria in the soil. And not what you'd expect if it was a chemical reaction. It wouldn't last that long. There's no way. The other experiment, the pyrolytic release experiment, showed that organic chemicals were manufactured in the soil by something. That's kind of hard to explain without life going on. And these two together gave life signals. So why didn't scientists say that Viking had found life? Because according to the pre-agreed criteria before Viking ever left the launch pad, both of those experiments found life. The reason was there was another instrument on board Viking, which was called the GCMS. That stands for gas chromatograph mass spectrometer. And the whole purpose of that instrument was to look for organics. Organics, anything containing carbon, basically, in the Martian soil. And that came up negative. It didn't find a single thing. It didn't find a single carbon-containing molecule in the soil. And it was used as a quarter of a fuel, basically. So you've got two experiments saying, yeah, there's life here by pre-agreed criteria. No instance says there can't be life. No organics, you can't have life. But that instrument wasn't working properly. And we know it wasn't working properly. It's been demonstrated. It was demonstrated even before Viking took off, although it wasn't really well known or advertised. But in several studies since then, identical equipment to the GCMS been tested on Antarctic soils, on soils from deserts, regions on Earth which are similar to Mars, and has failed to find life where we know there is life by other instruments. And so this quarter field instrument was faulty. It couldn't, we know it couldn't have detected organic material on Mars, and yet that's the way it panned out. The scientists used that as a way to say there's no life on Mars. So the GCMS found nothing. And so what does the Viking scientists team do? They dismissed the positive reasons of the other two experiments. And they said that the activity in the soil was due to some kind of reactive chemical like hydrogen peroxide, and that was that.
So that basically there, I didn't clarify that before I introduced it, was from the Phoenix lander, which operated, I think, for a period of about 6 months. I think it landed near the polar regions. I don't know all the details of all the missions. But the Phoenix lander landed near the polar regions of Mars and operated for about 6 months. And it had a microscope on it, so it was taking very close-up images of the soil. And what you saw there was an amateur researcher's stop frame animation where he took sequences of the images and strung them together. NASA didn't do that. He did it. And he discovered the movement of what appears to be bugs, microbes, something. Something is moving. And he basically ruled out from, that's what this reasoning is here, he ruled out that it was things blowing in the wind. It wasn't that. And I think you'll agree that in the pictures that you saw, it was obviously very indistinct, but you could see that there weren't a whole, they're moving in different directions and there were little things moving rather than just, whole lots going off at once. So these were very small things, less than the width of a human hair in some cases. But then the Phoenix lander stopped working soon after those images were taken. We don't know why. So that's an example of amateur research. I'll show you another example later on if we get a chance. And there are several sites looking at these anomalies on the surface. You get anomalies both at the small scale and the large scale if you look for them. And there was one site called Mars Anomaly Research, which has gone offline now, and that was a bit of a mixed bag. It had some interesting stuff on there, but I think this one was posted on there. And in case you didn't see it, what the hell is that? I know what I think it looks like, because it's meant to be random rocks, but it certainly doesn't look like that to me. Could be anything, but it certainly looks very strange. Now then, the other thing which caught my attention a few years ago, and again this goes back to 2004, NASA have said there may have been life at one time, but they claim not to know really, said they haven't got enough data. Well, these pictures are from Spirit and Opportunity rovers. They were a pair of rovers that landed on Mars in 2004. Again, fairly big budget project. A pair of rovers, I think one of them's still operating. I think one of them, the battery ran out a couple of years ago. One, I think, is just about still going. And they've driven about 3 kilometres or something across the surface or something. And Sir Charles Schultz III, a US scientist and researcher, and that's his website there, I think he's found fossils on Mars. He says that this is a sea urchin in this picture, and this is a seashell. I've got a news clip of him here, I think. Yeah, and here's I think this is a crinoid, and this is a trilobite, or trilobite, some people call it. That's NASA's pictures. You can go, I've got the references for those. You can go and look, they're on NASA's website. They deny it. This guy was, I'll just play the clip, I think. Here we go. And this is that's an Earth seashell, and that's from a NASA picture from either the Spirit or the Opportunity lander. Here we go, we'll listen to what he's got to say.
Well, last month, a NASA scientist in Alabama stunned the world when he said he discovered evidence of alien life. His claim was based on fossil remains he supposedly found in a meteorite. The next day, however, NASA said their researchers' work was flawed and unreliable. However, claims of alien life and fossils are nothing new for NASA. For the past 7 years, they've been dealing with the Winsboro man and his research. And his work may very well change our way of thinking forever. NASA has been trying to find out if life once existed or if it still exists there today. 30 years later, in December of 2006,
today you will hear what many are saying may be the most significant discoveries to date.
NASA scientists released photographs that suggest there is life, pictures that show water on Mars.
We can honestly talk about liquid water on the surface of Mars today.
The news was reported in the national media and was hailed as a major discovery. The only problem, another man says he made the very same discovery nearly 3 years earlier.
You came to the conclusion that there was water and life on Mars when?
The date when I was first certain of it was February 15th, 2004.
Charles Schultz looks and sounds like a modern-day Einstein. Using the Freedom of Information Act, he obtained more than 200,000 Mars images from NASA. And after thousands of hours of research, he came to some startling conclusions.
Many of the things that I've seen look very clearly like the recent erosion or presence of water, liquid water on the surface. And many of the images show what appear to be fossil organisms, marine fossils.
Right, fossils on Mars, and not just a few. Schultz says the planet is littered with them.
Right now, the planet has extremely thin air, very tough living conditions, but it is wet on the surface in many areas, and it is covered with fossil remains from marine organisms. Some of the fossils we found are seashells, and very clearly they are identical to the things we find on the Earth. This is a conch shell, apparently, found on the planet Mars, and this is one on the Earth, and you can see there's an absolute identical appearance to both of them.
Schultz showed me picture after picture.
This is a trilobite fossil. All NASA images, Opportunity, the rover found on the 158th day of its imaging.
And all of them compelling.
This clearly looks like water flow to me and mud.
It is.
The rover, the Opportunity, these Mars crafts have gone up there and literally have gotten stuck in the mud?
In many cases, yes.
Schultz's research has the potential to change the way we think about the universe. He's written numerous articles for scientific magazines and books on the subject.
latest is A Fossil Hunter's Guide to Mars. In it, he carefully lays out his research and conclusions.
NASA explained your findings.
Actually, they ignored it. In the beginning, when I began posting a lot of my information and sending it to them as well, there was some interest, and my website had hits from 40 to 90% from Mars researchers, NASA particularly, and other things. But over time, the died off, and there was no response. So they actually pretty much ignored what I posted.
NASA Director Charlie Bolden won't speculate on the potential for water or fossils on Mars, but he's hoping the next rover mission, Curiosity, will answer those questions once and for all. It takes off this November. The first data is expected by the fall of next year.
We expect to make discoveries with Curiosity. I don't want to, you know, set great expectations. What we find will be different from what we found before. It will look at the soil of Mars. It's looking for any signs of microbes or microbial life there. It's absolutely incredible what it's going to do.
And when I pressed him on Schultz's claims of fossils on Mars,
I don't know. You know, I wish I could say yes, I do, but I don't know. I really don't.
Bolden referred me to a NASA scientist who's been working on the very same subject.
This activity, especially the fact that it's going on today, to me says that the mid-latitudes of Mars are one of the more remarkable places in the solar system.
Philip Christensen is well known for his work on Mars. Remember that December 06 announcement of water on Mars? Well, Christensen was there, and NASA's conclusions were supported by his research.
NASA's goal, long-term goal, is to land on Mars, collect rocks, and bring them back to Earth, so we can examine them in laboratories here under microscopes and look for any evidence of fossils or any other evidence of ancient life on Mars. I'm very confident that that rover will make discoveries that will really change our thinking. Again, every time we look, we find an interesting place. There were clearly environments on Mars billions of years ago that were very much like the Earth. And, you know, it's very possible that life may have started it. Again, that would be a fantastic discovery, and that could be coming in the next year or so.
I think they have been ready with this for a very long time. The first researchers on the Mir team, the rover teams, included an oceanographer, a marine biologist, who was looking at the images. And that's very telling in its own right.
Schultz believes disclosure will happen next year once the rover sends images back to Earth. It's something he says could have happened sooner, but didn't because of religious beliefs.
Many people allow their beliefs to dominate regardless of the facts. And it's not a stab at religion. This is just a presentation of the facts. People who have faith find a way to live with the facts.
You're dealing with science.
That's absolutely correct. You have to work with science and facts.
Is there life on Mars right now?
I do believe so, because nothing we know of would sterilize the entire planet. Funguses, spores, bacteria could very easily still be in the soil today.
Well, despite his research, Schultz says he's not the person who first discovered life on Mars. He said that honor belongs to Viking mission scientist and current Arizona State University professor, Dr. Gary Levin. Levin believes he discovered microbial life from the soil samples taken from the two Viking missions from the 1970s. But NASA has never embraced those findings.
Well, a huge announcement from NASA today. Their scientists believe water is flowing on the surface of Mars, and it's believed to be salt water, which could still theoretically sustain life. NASA says striking new images from the mountains of Mars may be their best evidence yet of flowing liquid water. Those images appear to show some sort of water flow on the Mars surface. Now, if true, NASA says this has profound implications in the search for extraterrestrial life. But today's NASA announcement is nothing new for a Winnsboro man. Charles Schultz has been studying the so-called red planet for years, and back in April, he told News 19 viewers that there's microbial life and water on Mars. He believes NASA has known this for years and is releasing the information a little at a time.
Little by little, the information is being given to the public to sort of prepare them for what's to come. The flow of water and the creeping mud are very common on the planet Mars, even today. And this mud flow is terraced. It's in layers, just as you'd expect any place where water flows. You can see how it's moved around here. And this is actually the geyser that probably was the source of that water. For 45 years, we believe Mars to be as dry as the moon. And yet, constantly, we're given information that tells us that's not so. It's loaded with water and mineral resources. It's another planet just like the Earth.
And if you remember our story back in April, Charles tried to give NASA his findings, mm-hmm. and they basically wouldn't listen to him. Mm-hmm.
So it's all very well, you know, for them to put all this data out, but then they just go and debunk it. So they may announce water one day, but then they just, it's like they've never announced it. I mean, they just announced it again, you know, in 2011 they announced liquid water. And yet, you're going to see, I've got another slide from 1979, which talks of water on Mars. And this was, I've came across this quite recently. This is from Curiosity, it's a fairly recent picture. I can't remember the exact date that this was taken, but it was within, probably within the last year. And if you look at this thing here, somebody noticed that this looks like a similar to the fossilized spine of a creature. I've got a close up on the next slide here. I mean, you know, again, you go on the internet to look for this stuff, and you get all kinds of stuff. Most of it's pretty bad. You'll get pictures of rock formations on Mars, which they claim are like Nefertiti and various figureheads and stuff like this. But this is much more, I think, testable. You know, you can test some angles, you can look at, compare it to other structures on Earth, much more definite, and I think that probably is some type of fossil that they've got there. Now we're going to have a look at some larger scale anomalies, which are also present. And one of the first things, again, I included this in the original presentation, partly because of the person involved. A lot of attention has been focused on Cydonia, which is the region of Mars. I will mention it briefly in this presentation, that Richard Hoagland and a lot of other researchers have talked about. Cydonia is where the you know, the legendary face is on Mars, which I think is probably artificial, but I think it's one that is, I think there is more definite data than the face, to be honest, which I've got later coming up. But in, let's see, 2001... Arthur C. Clarke, and he comes back into our story later as well, has stated in his beliefs about discoveries on Mars on the 6th of June, he says, "I'm quite serious when I say have a really good look at these new Mars images." These are from Mars Global Surveyor. "Something is actually moving and changing with the seasons and suggests at least vegetation," he said. Clarke repeated several times that he was serious about his observations, pointing out that he sees something akin to banyan trees in some of the Mars Global Surveyor photos. And here are the, here is one of those photographs. Here's the image reference, so you can Google that image reference and find this image on the USGS website. What the hell are these things? These sort of radial things. James Rice, a planetary geologist at Arizona State University, said, "Most of the images in question that I looked over are of dunes in the polar regions. They are beginning to defrost as winter draws to a close. The sand composing the dunes is dark and the frost is bright, thereby causing the spotted pattern of the dune defrost. This is not vegetation, but rather the natural defrosting of dunes and sand sheets." Oh, really? Well, I think that's bogus myself. I don't know about you. There is some kind of definite organic structure here. Okay, and I think this video also indicates that this is another amateur researcher here.
"Since 1997, the Mars Global Surveyor spacecraft has been imaging the surface of Mars. In at least five of the archived images, unusual circular rings with average diameters over 20 meters have been recorded near northern polar dunes. E20-01114 recorded September 2002. SP2-53807 recorded September 1998. M20-00416 recorded October 2000. SP2-50805 recorded August 1998. MOC2-147 is a NASA image showing a portion of image SP2-53807. M19-01495 recorded September 2000. The cause or origin of these unique features remains a mystery. NASA has proposed explanations such as exploding gas and springtime thawing of frozen CO2, but these theories usually come with the qualifiers speculation, thought to be. Much remains unknown and not well understood. the existing theories raise more questions than answers. There is, however, another possibility, an explanation that comes to match ring shape to date, time, latitude, and surrounding surface features at multiple locations. Image SP2-53807 contains hundreds of rings in a field of small dunes. It was observed in this image that the orientation of ring elongation matched the direction of sunlight. Ring after ring, precisely aligning with the sun. In addition to the alignment of sunlight direction, ring distortion or directional change was noted in cases where the rings transitioned from flat ground to sloped dune surfaces. These two qualities imply that the dark rings are shadows cast by features on the surface of the planet. To test this theory, a computer-generated 3D model of the shape that causes ring shadows was created. Mounds of dunes, a large partition dune, and a crater were also modeled. Lighting angles and directions were generated for hourly intervals of a 24-hour solar cycle corresponding to latitude 76.7 north and a solar longitude of 79.0 degrees, where 0 degrees equals the beginning of spring and 90 degrees equals the beginning of summer. Shadows were then rendered by the computer. Cycling through the simulated Martian day, we see the rings changing shape dramatically as the sun inclination angle goes from a maximum 23.0 degrees to a minimum of minus 3.6 degrees. To better compare the MGS images with computer simulation, a model of a portion of image SP2-53807 was created. Once again, light, inclination, and direction were generated. At latitude 87.7 north and solar longitude of 25.8, this results in continuous sunlight with a minimum solar inclination of 6.3 degrees and a max inclination of 16.9 degrees. Pausing the model at what would be 3 o'clock Martian time, we can zoom in on individual rings to compare them to the NASA image taken at 2:30. Ring directional changes at transitions between flat ground and dune in the model matches the MGS images almost exactly. For the ring at the lower left of the model, in addition to the transition points matching, the bright white reflection of the dune can be seen through the center of the ring in both the model and the MLC image. A computer model was also created to simulate the conditions of image E20-01114. In this MGS image, four rings are visible against a large Martian dune. Identical material properties were applied to all components, and shadows were rendered for each hourly interval. As we cycle through several Martian days, we can see that at this latitude and season, the sun never sets. Observe how ring shadows shorten against the dune, then lengthen on the flat ground. To make a side-by-side comparison of MOC image to model, the contrast in the MOC image was increased to bring out more detail. A bright bend was noted along the bottom of the MOC dune, so the slope of the dune model was increased to 30 degrees along the bottom, resulting in a visual match. Taking a closer look at the second ring from the left, the first thing worth noting is how the shadow-causing object nearly disappears against the ground. Contrasting this are the dark green shadows and the bright dune reflections. Also, both the MOC image and the model rings are wide on the flat ground and thin on the dune slope. In addition, both model and MOC image display a hook on the right side as well as the bright dune reflection through their centers. MOC image M19-0 1495, offers two intriguing ring shapes. With the sunlight inclination of 25 degrees, it's difficult to imagine a feature that would produce a horseshoe-shaped reflective ring, especially considering the shape spans flat ground and dune slope. For example, a crater formation produces a frontal reflection and a crescent reflection in the back. One configuration that does produce a horseshoe shape is a layered mound or layered spherical structure. Light striking the back slope and sides will be reflected skyward. While light striking the front becomes trapped by layers above, this results in a gap in the bright reflective ring. Note how in the NASA image, there is no white reflection on the sunny side of both features. The model shows a similar pattern. Also notice how dune reflections match with both the model and MOC image. Although not readily apparent, top view of the SP2-53807 model or the shadow rendered simulations, the recreated features were all modeled with a layered structure. A ground view in the direction of the yellow arrow allows this to be seen. A view from the middle looking right gives us another perspective. A view from top right toward bottom shows height in relation to the dunes. A ground view of the E20-01114 model reveals the same layer structure. Tree-like shapes on Mars may seem like an impossibility. However, this model with a layered construction similar to a spruce tree creates both bright reflective rings and dark shadow rings that closely match the various Mars Global Surveyor MOC images. All the elements needed for life are available at the northern polar locations, high concentrations of water in the form of ice, carbon dioxide, and sunlight. The recent discovery by the European spacecraft Mars Express of methane in the Martian atmosphere lends more support to the possibility of present-day life on Mars.
Amateur research. That's done by an amateur researcher. NASA should be ashamed of themselves. Ashamed of themselves. But because we now have access to the technology, the same technology that they have, those that have got the skills and take the time and the trouble can prove these things. That is something very like trees on Mars. Something very like trees on Mars. I think that guy is dead on. I wrote to him and, you know, he sent me back an acknowledgement. So I'm pretty sure he's a genuine guy. Alan Moen did that analysis. God knows how long it took him to build all the models, but that's what you call scientific analysis. Not, oh, well, we don't quite understand what it is, you know. Oh, well, it might be life, but we need more information. So let's spend another $1 billion. And then they should debunk that. It gets worse, I'm afraid, folks. On the left here, this, I forget the name of it, let's see if I can read it. Juventae Chasma, this is a region of Mars. I think you can see the obvious. It's a layered, you know, I've got the image reference on ESA's website. I've done no processing on this. I've taken this image straight off the European Space Agency website and I've just clicked out this portion. This is a mine workings. 2 minutes. This is mine workings on Mars. I'm convinced of that. You can even see they've got this little section here reproduced here. Why don't ESA and NASA talk about this? Because they run a mile from this stuff. They just run away from it. I've shown some of these before. This is another one. I mean, this is I measured this. I've worked out, you know, it's from the pixel resolution. This is 3 miles. Dead straight, 3 miles. and it intersects with the right angle. It actually looks like a ray structure, but it's not, it's a channel. And no one will talk about this image. I haven't seen any explanation for this image, but there's the image reference, SP243004. Google it, you can find it on USGS website. It's an unprocessed image. I haven't done anything to that, apart from paste it into the slide. Now this is my favourite. To me, I cannot escape that this is an artificial structure. For me, no ifs, ands or buts. This is artificial. I happen to think it's 530 metres across the crater there, so this dome is probably, what, about half that distance, maybe slightly less, 200 metres across perhaps. When I first came across this in 2004, I couldn't believe it. Nobody was talking about this image. Everyone was talking about the face. Yeah, right enough. They don't talk about this. I think this is what it could be, judging by the structure, a geodesic dome. Somebody posted this on a forum, it's quite a good comparison. This is the South Polar Base, the McMurdo Station, I think. And that's what it looks like when it's been weathered, and you can see the analysis. I found this on a message board. So that's very, very interesting analysis there, I think, or comparison, I should say. Now then, that picture was taken, I think, in 2001, I forget the exact date, because the USGS images don't always give the date that they were taken. It was either taken in 1998, 2000 or 2001, so it's over 10 years old, that dome image there, from Mars Global Surveyor. And as I said, if I picked up that on my monitor, I'd go up to the people in Mission Control with a gun and say, you're going to take more photographs of this. I don't care if you're going to use up all the fuel for orbital manoeuvres. You're going to get the closest photographs of this that you possibly can. Because this is the most interesting picture I've ever seen from Mars. And this is also near to it as well. Quite near. What the hell is this? I called it the Caterpillar. That's my name for it. And if you look at what they've got on Mars Global Surveyor, is they've got something called the laser altimeter. MOLA, Mars Orbiter Laser Altimeter, MOLA data. So they actually measure the height of the ground. They can actually get a relief, an accurate relief, by bouncing laser light off the surface. If you go and try and access the MOLA data for that portion of the image, last time I looked, it was under peer review. It was inaccessible. You could not get the data for this portion of the image. I've got a short video clip here, and then maybe I'll do one more image after this. A couple of images after this, and then we'll have a break. That's all on one image strip. I think that's about 50, maybe 100 miles long. Go and Google it, download it, look at it yourself, see what you think. NASA ain't going to tell you anything about it. Now, because I think that's one of the most intriguing images of any space image that I've ever seen anywhere at any time, I use it as my avatar on, you know, Skype and eBay, because I want people to see that and say, what the hell is that? That's what I want them to say. I want to arouse their curiosity, all right, because it's so weird. Very few people do it, but I was actually on Skype to my brother, probably a while ago. I don't speak to him that often on Skype. He says, Andrew, what the hell's that on your Skype image? And I thought, yes, somebody's asked. So I said, oh, well, if you want to know, do you know where it is? No, it's on Mars. Oh. So do you want to see the picture? All right, send me the link. So I sent him this link. When I first looked, because this image was a new image, I forgot, you know, you might have guessed it from the caption. These are new 2008 images taken from another probe, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. We've had about four or five different probes tonight already. There's loads more. Five, I think, so far tonight we've referenced. Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, that took off, 2007, I think. And look at the caption. Crater with textured mound. So I sent my brother the link to this page, which is on University of Arizona's website. You know, it's a university website, it's NASA data. But when I sent him the link to this page, as I'd seen it, and I picked up that image, this image here, and the one on the next page, when he clicked on that page, that's what came up. I think I was talking to him in about May 2011. Caption's the same. Crater with textured mound. Huh? Looks like some uninteresting blobs to me. Now, sure enough, if you go down and look at these links at the bottom here, you'll find the image. You can dig it out. You've got to sort of hunt for it a bit, but it's still there. They haven't got rid of it. But why on earth are you going to change? As a university website meant to be looking at interesting things on Mars, why the hell are you going to change from that image, which is what's on that data for that page, to that? It can only be a cover-up. It can only be a cover-up. I cannot think of any other reason. It's like all these things. You paid millions of dollars, millions of pounds, to look for a cure for cancer, but not find one. You paid billions of dollars to look for life on Mars, but not find it. It's the same scammery, the same mentality that's at work. It's exactly the same. So here's some close-ups of that to make it a bit larger. And you can see it almost looks less artificial, but you can still see it's a very spherical shape. You've got this tube coming up out of it. Is this some kind of transit system or something? I've no idea. And that's an even closer version. And you can download very high resolution images. That's something like 1 meter per pixel or something. I forget the exact figure. I think the other one was 7 meters per pixel. And these are one meter per pixel images. So it looks like something's got encrusted on the top of it, some crystallization or ice or something, I don't know. I shouldn't be postulating this. NASA should be working on this, telling us what it is, and this is that caterpillar thing. Again, I've no idea what it is. Very peculiar. And that's a close-up with some other structures there. Very, very high-resolution images from the high-rise. So I just want to finish this segment with this, because, and it re-emphasise what I just told you about NASA, what not looking at it. So going back to 2004, I didn't even bother with the new images, the new high-res ones, but going back to 2004, I decided to do my own sort of experiment of psychology, I suppose. And I got those two images, just like that, put them in an email, that's all the word, didn't give any other information, and I sent them to the Beagle 2 team, because I got in touch with somebody from Beagle 2. They looked like longitudinal dunes to me. It would be nice to get the topography, but Mars Express will only have about 1/3 of the resolution at this latitude. These are natural features. As with the face, which was subsequently shown to be a collection of hills, the human mind is, of course, pre-programmed by evolution to identify patterns and simulate them into pictures we recognise. More data is required of such features to fully identify. Yeah, well, you've got the flipping data. You should go and look at it, man. So that was one response I got. Another one, I just got 42 geologists at random from university websites, just collected a load of email addresses, blasted this off. So apologised for intruding on their day and says, could you tell me what these images are? I just sent them those two images, no links, nothing. You know, they could have been taken, you know, could be a wart on my foot for all they knew. They didn't know what they were. So I wrote to this guy, and so he wrote back, assistant professor at American University Geology Department, and he said, Oh, first thing he asks, he got it right, says, where did these images come from? So I sent him the links to the USGS website, right? The USGS website, which he should be familiar with, him being, you know, a geologist. Hi, Andrew. These two images from the surface of Mars are certainly puzzling and have been floating around on UFO web pages for some time. I am sorry, but I do not believe in big conspiracy theories and that the government is trying to hide something from us concerning Mars or any other planet. That's not what I asked him. I said, what the hell is it? Div. And at the end he says, good luck with your investigations. Me? I'm not a flipping geologist. I don't work for NASA. I've just got a bloody website. It's you that's paid to look at this stuff. And this guy had even done some work on Mars, on peridotites or something. He was telling me about this. I'm not interested in that. What the hell is this dome, man? And then just to end the first half, but it's funny, this is, you know, it's just ridiculous. I've showed this slide before, but I've got to show it again because I get a kick out of it every time. Somebody at NASA searched for news life on Mars and came to my website and looked at the article. Isn't that sweet irony, eh? I just haven't bothered to keep track of it anymore. And then I got another one as well from the Marshall Space Flight Center. What did they search for? I can't remember. But anyway, they came and clicked on that T-shirt shape. And they found the image on my website, somebody from NASA. So with that, we'll just have a break now for to get a cup of tea before we go into the second half. And yeah, I've got a quick question, but if people want to have a break. It varies depending on where it is.
Yeah, but
I don't know. It's probably something within probably a couple of 100 miles, maybe 300 miles, something like that. I'd have to check up on that because I don't know. Thank you. Thanks for listening.
Right, part two, Andrew, thank you.
Thank you very much, Rob. We'll switch the thing back on. Okay, I hope that's come back on. I'm just wondering if my clicker's just broken down or the battery's gone flat or something. Let me just check that. That's better. Okay, I'll probably skip over this, but because I've got a lot that many people might have seen this footage before. NASA is covering up an awful lot of stuff. A couple of examples that you can watch are NASA footage from STS-75, Space Shuttle Mission 75, and STS-80, where you can clearly see some anomalous bright objects coming near the shuttle, photographed in ultraviolet light. Very, very unusual footage. That's sort of going a bit away from... In fact, well, I'll just show you a bit of this one. This is from STS-80, I think. You can see this thing shooting off, and this thing travelling along, and then it shoots off in the opposite direction. That's not an ice particle. That's from the shuttle. That's from the shuttle. Soon after this footage was captured, they encrypted all the footage from the shuttle. Martin Stubbs captured some of this. Okay, more surface anomalies. That's a picture from NASA's website.
Censored.
I mean, to be honest, that could just be a data loss of some kind, but if it is a data loss, it's a peculiar one. This came out quite recently from Curiosity. This is only about 6 weeks ago. What the hell is this? Again, I don't know. NASA won't tell you much. This is on NASA's website. Looks like somebody's got a fossilised bike or something stuck in the rock. Looks like a handlebar coming out. But that is a real picture from Curiosity from February 5th, around that time. We've talked about the colour. Yeah, again, they lied again about this. This was the lander's, this is from Spirit Rover. This was a picture on the Earth, and this is the colour chart. And then when it was on Mars, it looked like this on the pictures that came back. You can clearly see it in these images. And they've changed a blue to a red. That's colour substitution. In other words, if the light coming through the atmosphere was red, and you shine red onto blue paper, you don't get red paper turning blue in red light. It will be look grey or a muddy sort of black. They have used colour substitution on that image. No ifs, ands or buts. This is quite an interesting panorama from Spirit Rover. Original caption release. There's the photojournal.nasa. You can go and look at that image if you want. 115th of Martian Day, 2004. What the hell is that? It's like a plank of wood to me. Yeah, it does. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I thought it was. That's on a NASA image on their website. You can go and look at it. And then we've seen the rover tracks in the other video. This is mud. You can't get impressions like that in dry, dusty material. It doesn't happen. These things have got to be bound together where the ridges are when something runs over it. And it was even reported. In fact, you saw some of the reports on that earlier one, but we're going back to 2004, 9 years ago. Scientists are intrigued by the marks left by Spirit's airbags when it landed on the surface. The soil shows unusual cohesiveness, almost as if the soil grains were stuck together like mud. Stephen Quires is also puzzled. The way in which the surface has responded is bizarre. It looks like mud, but it can't be mud. That's from the mission, controller. Looks like it, but it can't be it, so it isn't. Next. NASA told us there was water on Mars in 1979. Caption from NASA's image. This colour image shows a thin layer of water ice frost. Water ice frost. 1979. Yet they're still saying, oh, we don't know if there's water or not. And that's the skirt again, it's a blue sky on that. Oh, we've done this really in the video. You saw this. This is Charles Schultz with his more detailed imagery there. You've seen this in the video before. Plenty of evidence for mud on Mars. Now, even more controversially though, is larger structures. I've shown this once or twice before. Can you see it? Can you see it yet? Remember, there should be just piles of rocks on Mars. For anything to resemble that with a pyramid-shaped object in the background is rather weird. I don't know if it's a sphinx, but looking at the surface resolution enhancement technique, which is a technique that NASA used to enhance this image, it's a mighty strange image. It's a mighty strange image. That's on Richard Hoagland's website. I've nicked quite a bit of stuff from his website for tonight. I think that was done by Mike Barra, that analysis, or possibly Mark Carlotto. I certainly didn't do it, but it's a very peculiar image. That's from 1997, from Pathfinder, an even earlier mission, which we haven't mentioned. Let's try this. Oh, hang on. Probably need my mouse for that. Yeah. Rush Limbaugh, I need my mouse to play this clip, but he basically said in a broadcast on March 4th, 2004, that he'd read a secret report called the Gore Report, and then he initially called it the Mars Report, and he said, so it's clear that there was life elsewhere, and now that NASA has kind of let the cat out of the bag, if there were habitable conditions up there, we know there was life there. In fact, they found some DNA evidence up there that compares favourably, this is where it's disinformation clearly, to members of the Skull and Bone Society here on Earth. In fact, they used the internal combustion engine. They were globalists. They got rid of all the countries on that planet, and they had just one giant society, and the powerful rich just absorbed everything they needed from the best parts of the planet, used it for themselves, and everybody basically suffered until everybody died out, because what happened there, there were no checks and balances. It's clear, ladies and gentlemen, Mars was once a jewel of the solar system, and it was raped. Mars was raped. This is Rush Limbaugh, the political commentator in the US. I've got the audio clip, but I can't. It's just saying this. You can go and listen to it. It's on the web. The Australian Cardinal George Pell and Mars. He said in an article in the Daily Mail entitled "The Pope Condemns the Climate Change Prophets of Doom," right? He said, They were talking about CO2 and stuff, and he said, the industrial military complex up on Mars can't be blamed for that. As in, there's climate change going on Mars, and they couldn't be blamed. Does he know something? Very peculiar. Very peculiar. Talking about, as I say, CO2 emissions. Now, I believe, and I'm skipping to lots of several different things here, that a certain member of the audience, Mr. David Boyle, will be telling you more about this better than I could in a couple of weeks. I made this image myself. I think this image I picked up off David Percy's website, who's written a book called Two Thirds about all this stuff. But I'm just showing you the tiniest bit of it. I can't accept that that is a coincidence myself. There may be others in the audience who can. That's Avebury, Silbury Hill, overlaid with Cydonia. I think Dave has told me that there's 1,000 points of correspondence between those two images. I've just highlighted three, essentially. That's on a scale of 14 to 1. In other words, what's on Mars is 14 times bigger than on the Earth. There is a story here we're not being told by NASA or anybody. Instead, they're still saying, well, there might be bacteria one week, and they say, no, there isn't. Didn't work. It's wrong. The next week. Meanwhile, you've got images like this being completely ignored by all scientists. They cannot. It's career suicide to even think about talking about it. There is a story here we are not being told. I don't know exactly what that story is, but there is a story. So, summary for evidence of life on Mars. There are non-natural structures on Mars. That's my conclusion. You may have a different conclusion. Surface water was photographed 26 years ago in some detail by Viking. Dr. Gilbert Levin, creator of the Viking Life Detection Experiment, says experiment that worked. Evidence of biomarker gases being present in the Martian atmosphere. NASA has presented images that don't have the correct colours. That's clear. You just need to look at them. And we've got lots of evidence of soil moisture. You've seen bits and pieces. I'm sure if you went and looked, you could find loads more. And there are other... I was talking to people in the interview. I'll take it out of this presentation. We've got a lot more stuff now to cover. But there are other people who say they've been to Mars. There's a William Hamilton claims to have talked to a US colonel who went on a ship that travelled at 0.8 speed of light to Mars some years ago. Media never really focused down on the discoveries of water and methane. They've essentially repeated the same stories roughly every 4 years. That's what I've seen, or when there's a current Mars mission. So now we're going to move to Phobos. What's Phobos? Well, it's just a rock orbiting Mars, yeah? Phobos, the inner enlarger of Mars's two moons, it was discovered telescopically with its companion moon Deimos by American astronomer Asaph Hall in 1877. Now, some people think that's quite a late discovery date. It is quite late, because a lot of these sort of moons were discovered long before that. And I'll try and hint at why that's possible, but it is very small. It's only about, 11 kilometres across or something. Because about Asaph Hall, 1877. It's named for one of the sons of Ares, the Greek counterpart of the Roman god Mars. Phobos is a small, irregular, rocky object with crater-scarred groove surface. Roughly ellipsoidal, measures 26 kilometres, 16.5 miles across at its widest point. And it resolves once around Mars every 7 hours 39 minutes at an exceptionally close mean distance of only 5,827 miles. That's blooming close, because our moon is 280,000 miles away. So Phobos is damn close to the surface. In fact, its orbit is decaying already. It's going to crash into Mars at some point. Very low orbit. Very interesting. Look at these lines here, and some of these lines intersect at right angles. Now, I thought that these lines may have been created by rocks rolling along the surface in what can be called microgravity. Because Phobos is so small, it has a very weak gravitational field. And I think, if you hit a baseball... I think Carl Sagan drew this analogy once. If you're standing on Phobos and hit a baseball, it would achieve escape velocity and leave, and go off into space, because it's such a weak gravity field. So you can imagine that these rocks could kind of like roll round and round the moon, but I'm not so sure. And this picture's from Ceres, which is, Vesta, so I apologise. It's the second largest asteroid. It's 526 kilometers in diameter. So it's about 20 times, whatever, 40 times, 20 times, can't do my maths. Something like 20 times bigger than Phobos, but yet it's still got these linear lines of craters. Very peculiar. I don't know what they are. I don't know what they are. But it's very interesting features. Now we've got these high resolution pictures. I forget when this picture was taken, fairly recently, I think maybe like 2003, 4, last few years. Now, there's some very interesting postulation going on about Phobos. And in fact, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce his name, because it's Russian. Slavsky calculated the orbital motion of the Martian satellite Phobos and came to the jaw-dropping conclusion that the moon is artificial, hollow, and basically a Titanic spaceship. And he said this in the 1960s. I forget the exact date. Yeah, 1963, I think this was talked about. Now, when you know the orbit of an object, you can work out its mass, okay? And if you can measure its size, you can work out its density. So you know, if you compare that with the density of other objects in the solar system, you can work out. So Phobos was way too light for its size. Way too light. So he worked out from the density, based on it being some type of rock that the other asteroids are made of, they could work out that it was hollow. And this is an interesting picture here, just that I stuck in. This is a recent picture because it's taken from Curiosity rover, and it's got a camera on a mast about, I don't know, 3 or 4 feet above the surface. That's a picture of Phobos taken by Opportunity from the surface. So even though it's much, much smaller than our moon, you can get a fairly good image of it with the Curiosity rover. So basically this guy calculated in the 60s that he thought Phobos was hollow, and everyone said, oh, get lost. It's ridiculous. Spaceship? Nonsense. But, oh dear. Precise mass determination in the nature of Phobos. Now, from the recent instrumentation on Mars Express and whatnot, these fellows, I won't read out all the names, I've got a copy of this scientific letter if anybody wants it, it's three or four pages long. It was received on the 3rd of December 2009, revised on the 8th of March 2010, accepted 22nd of March 2010, published 7th of May 2010 in the Geophysical Research Letters, Volume 37. And I downloaded this exact paper. We conclude that the interior of Phobos likely contains large voids. What does large voids mean? It's hollow. When applied to the various hypotheses bearing on the origin of Phobos, these results are inconsistent with the proposition that Phobos is a captured asteroid. Oh dear. So it's not a rock that's fallen into the orbit of Phobos, into the orbit of Mars. What the hell is it? I don't know. I'm just telling you what the scientific research says. But we'll move on to this idea that some of these objects may be not as we're told. And again, you can go and, you know, you can go and check that out. You can check that paper out. It's not me telling you this. It's these guys. Now, we get disinformation circulated. And I was talking to somebody in the interval. And this article, I'm not going to read it all out, it's quite long, published in 1992, and this was meant to be the last picture from Phobos 2, this ill-fated Russian probe. It was approaching Phobos, photographing, taking pictures, and then bang, stops working. Just stops working. And on the last picture, you can see this line, and this article goes to great lengths. Oh, this is a missile. So they didn't want this probe, somebody didn't want this probe to land on Phobos. No. They fired a missile at it. Well, and I'd heard that story and I'd read about it. I tracked down this article when I was putting this presentation together. There's the rest of the article. I'm not going to read it all out. It tells you about where these pictures came from and they were leaked or something. But if we go on a couple of slides, I managed to find the actual pictures, not a photocopy as that was. These are the actual pictures. And you can clearly see these are the last pictures from the ill-fated Phobos 2, which I think only took about 6 pictures before it just stopped working for whatever reason. Maybe it crashed into it, I don't know, or some solar flare which zapped it, I don't know. But you can clearly see this isn't a missile, it's a digital artifact. The line stays in the same place and it goes right up the picture. So it's not a missile. They also talked in this article about a peculiar shadow seen by Phobos 2, the probe, on the surface of Mars. And there's quite some discussion of this. And I saw a YouTube video about this. Well, this shadow has been photographed, this odd elliptical shadow, has been photographed multiple times since. And it's actually the shadow of Phobos on the surface of Mars, which can be photographed from orbit. So there's nothing mysterious about this. Whilst I have told you that it is mysterious that Phobos is hollow, and it doesn't make sense of it being a captured asteroid, this is not a mystery. It's known that this is the shadow of Phobos. And there are several pictures now from Mars Express and Mars Global Surveyor and so forth. So now we're going to move on. What is Phobos? What's going on Phobos? Well, I think there's something going on Phobos, because an untrustworthy fraud called Buzz Aldrin started talking about it. This article was published in the Daily Mail on the 8th of August, I think, can't read the exact date, 2009, and we're going to come back to what these pictures show here. Buzz Aldrin stokes the mystery of the monolith on Mars. Here we go. Let's see. I think I've got him on here.
We can visit other people with their habitation. We can keep track. If there's something very important to be developed from the moon, I'm not sure what it is right now. And I sure think we should identify what it is for America to make such gross expenditures again for human habitation on the moon. We can help. We can join with together. We can explore the moon and develop the moon. We should go boldly where man has not gone before. Fly by the comets, visit asteroids, visit the moon of Mars. There's a monolith there, a very unusual structure on this little potato-shaped object that goes around Mars once in 7 hours. When people find out about that, they're going to say, who put that there? Who put that there? Well, the universe put it there. If you choose, God put it there.
So this is what it looks like on the picture, on one of the pictures. I'm going to come back to these pictures a bit more. This unusual Mars Global Surveyor image was taken in 1998, yet that Daily Mail story was in 2009, 11 years later. Now that picture, that article in the Daily Mail, you can clearly see, if I go back to it, these are different objects, and if you go lower down the article, it references this as well. So what's going on with this? Well, I made a little video clip from this image, a bit like the other one. We'll try and have a look at it. So this is an annotated view by this chap, Palermo, who's looked at a lot of these images. He's looked at the shadow length and so on. But I made a little video clip which went over that whole image strip, and I actually found what I think is some interesting things in it. I think there could be lots of monoliths. See what you think. And you probably see some that I haven't zoomed in on. So what exactly is it? What are all these strange nodules? I don't know, but there seems to be quite a few of them. Again, we've got a very low sun angle and whatnot, but They look like more than rocks to me.
Is it possible to work out the height by the shadow cast?
Yes. I think if you get the image resolutions on it, it's a bit tricky because of the image projection and stuff, but it is possible to work it out. I haven't worked it out, but I think it's possible. Now, we've got a couple of more very interesting images here. These two images were taken on the 23rd of March by 2008 by the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. These weren't mentioned in the Daily Mail article, even though they were taken a year previously. I found them separately on some other page. Can't remember how I found them. But have a look at these on a video clip that I made, just again a minute long. Very white appearance compared to the surrounding landscape. A couple there, one there, probably another one there. This is the second image from Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. Got to be pretty big though for that, yeah. Could be. I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's extremely peculiar. Really sticks out. But they don't talk about this stuff. And then the other one, again, they claim to have explained this as just a pile of rocks, an optical illusion or whatever, but I don't know. This was the other one that was in the Daily Mail article. It's taken in Valles Marineris. So in other words, the Daily Mail mixed together the monolith on Phobos with one that's actually, or one that appears to be on the surface of Mars. It mixes the two things together. And this is actually from PSP 09342-1725. And this is what it looks like as you zoom in. It's basically within this yellow circle area here. So you've got this sort of odd shaped hill here with a vaguely suggested triangular appearance. I'm not saying it's a pyramid, but it's got a vaguely suggested triangular appearance. And this is it. That's what it looks like when you zoom in. Very straight edges. You know, the Daily Mail article has a the monolith from 2001, claiming, you know, that it's a version of that. I don't know. It is very peculiar, very straight. You can go and find it on that image yourself. I downloaded the original and checked that it was there, and it was. Now, the mystery to me was this. I spent ages looking for this image, because this image was also in the Daily Mail article, but they didn't give a reference where it came from. So I couldn't even find which image that came from, and all I could see was repeats of this image. So I don't know what the source of this image is. It's been featured on several web pages. But it's not on that. It's not on that image. I couldn't find it anywhere on there. So I think they're putting disinformation out. Okay. Still got quite a bit to cover, so I'll probably skip through some of this quite quickly. But we're now going to move further out in the solar system, away from Mars. This is just a little bit on the planet Saturn. I've only got a couple of slides for this to make people aware of this peculiar thing. And I first came across this hexagon in, about 2007, around that sort of time. But it was actually apparently discovered by Voyager, is what I've more recently read. I never heard that talked about. This is an animation. This is a stable feature in the atmosphere. And also these spokes in the rings, very peculiar. And that when the Cassini probe went and tried to photograph these spokes in the rings, they disappeared. This was from Voyager. And this is a stunning image from Cassini, taken not so long ago, only 2 or 3 months ago. Here you can see a portion of the rings here with the shadow of the planet. What the hell's going on with this hexagon? They claim to have simulated this in a laboratory now. It's just basically a complex effect of turbulence. Richard Hoagland claims that it's an imprint of hyperdimensional energy, which is where it ties in with sacred geometry and this sort of thing. I tend to think there's something in that, but again, it's more speculation than anything else. But the hexagon is real. You can see it's real. It's on multiple images. Very peculiar. And I just wanted to point out this that happened in 2010. This huge storm, that came up in the atmosphere of Saturn. And in fact, if you look at all the planets in the solar system, they're all undergoing change in their atmospheres. So I think that's more what is causing climate change than anything to do with it. Rob and I were talking about CO2, the CO2 lie that they're using to control everyone. All the planets in the solar system have undergone change. I've got that in my booklet there if you want that. I forgot to say, I've got one copy left here tonight of Judy Wood's book. I've got some new copies of Judy Wood's book. So if anybody wants that, £25. Now we'll look at the rings of Saturn a bit. Let me play this. A couple of minutes long, this.
See some havoc wreaked by objects about a kilometre in diameter. This radio took a trail of one of the 500 or so kind of objects that we see punching through parts of the airframe. We've highlighted the area where these trails can be seen. These are slow speed collisions, perhaps just a few metres per second, but they drag these glittering ice particles out of the airframe with them. Cassini scientists can call these trails mini jets. They look tiny because in a full image you're looking along by 10,000. There's a lot of serendipity involved. We're actually concentrating on Prometheus. What we didn't notice at the time was one of these tiny little trails that sort of sneaked into their field of view. But now we've done things a bit more methodically. We've actually looked at about 20,000 images. And we found lots of these little guys, and some of them we just caught in the act. So far we've seen about 500 of these objects in the same images. Some of them may even be the same object. What's important about these images is that these little guys are missing wing. We know what Prometheus was. Prometheus creates channels, ripples, snowballs in the airframe. What we didn't know is what happened to these snowballs after they were created. We know also that Prometheus can probably destroy some of these things, just like it can create them, and can also change the walls. Now we've got evidence that some of the guys actually survive, and they go on to punch through the airframe and run. Essentially, we're taking our images of the airframe, removing the planet, and exaggerating the radiant scale. Thanks to Cassini, we can study all this activity in the airframe over time. Even during the time that Cassini's been on Saturn, the airframe keeps changing. It's the only thing you can rely on in the airframe. Every time you look at it, it can be different.
So these are all Cassini images from the Cassini probe, which is a very complex probe that was sent up, I think, in the 1990s, and been sending back amazing pictures of the rings of Saturn and the moons, which are going to come more to more of these pictures. So that's a standard NASA ESA video, explaining how they think that Prometheus interacts with the rings to create these spikes, which may be the correct explanation. I don't know. I don't know enough about these things. Maybe all there is to it. But I thought it was interesting because. Oh, in fact, yeah, this is another... I've just thrown this in here because it's to do with Saturn, and I've got this probably slightly out of order, but a couple of years ago, they had this headline in the one of the Australian news websites, conspiracy theorists confident Photoshop NASA image is a cover-up. And basically, if you took this picture which appeared on Astronomy Picture of the Day, APOD, and you enhanced the contrast and brightness, you could clearly see the Photoshop brush marks here. And it looked like a pretty ropey job, but apparently the official story behind this was that there are three colour images that they had to overlay. In the time that separated the three frames, which are separate colour images, so if I did a simple colour composite, it would be able to make Titan look right, but not Dione. This is Dione in the foreground and Titan in the background. So I aligned Dione, cut it out, and then aligned Titan, and then had to account for the missing bits of the shadow where the bits of Dione had been in the two of the three channels. So she actually, this is a photoshopped image. NASA have admitted that. So they do photoshop images when they feel it's artistically correct. This is an admission of that. Now, why I showed you the Prometheus video, Prometheus said to be, you know, manipulating the rings of Saturn, is because this book has created quite a stir. And I've had a quick look at it. I haven't read it properly. I must admit, I wasn't that impressed by it. But it's by Norman Berggren, who was a scientist. And he actually analysed the Voyager pictures using optical methods. And he claimed to be able to observe these machines constructing the rings of Saturn. So I've got a little video about that now. Yeah, some of these are mixed sort of things. That's probably just a lens flare. I don't think that's a solid object. I'm pretty sure that's just a lens flare, has all the characteristics. But there are some interesting sets of images. These are all numbered, so you can search for these images on the Cassini database. It does look like there are objects moving in strange directions on some of these images. There's something creating a shadow across the ring there, things sticking up from the rings. Very, very peculiar things going on with these rings. So what's going on with these things flying across? There's a claim by Stephen Greer that somebody in the C-SETI group had picked up images of a, you know, flying saucer of some kind or a disc, but that was then denied by, you know, the person that was said to have come out with this information. I don't know, but certainly if we take a quick look at some of these pictures, time's getting on now, so I'm probably going to skip through the rest of this fairly quickly. Aptus is a real mystery to me. Perhaps on par with what's on Mars. In Greek mythology, Iapetus was a titan, a god, the son of Uranus and Gaia, and the ancestor of mankind. The moon of Iapetus was discovered in 1671, and it was renamed. It was originally going to be called because Cassini, I think, he observed it from over 740 million miles away using a 17th century refracting telescope whose main lens was only 2 inches in diameter. It's a tiny instrument that he detected this with. When Cassini observed Iapetus over a period of time, he was puzzled that every 40 days or so it seemed to disappear and then reappear 40 days later. And it became clear later on why this was. The orbit of Iapetus is unusual. I'll try and play again a clip in a minute why this is interesting. And you've got these. This is looking edge on to the rings of Saturn here, Saturn in the middle. And this is the orbits of the other moons. And Iapetus goes round an angle inclined to the rings of Saturn by 15 degrees. Again, it's an unusual orbit. Photographed in 1981 by Voyager, it was this sort of image. You've got this light area here, dark here. And then Cassini made a closer approach, 2004. And then, December the 31st, 2004, had a much closer encounter, passing at a distance of 40,000 miles. The ridge is conspicuous in this picture, and it has an approximately 20 kilometre wide, 12 miles, and it's 800 miles long. It runs right round the equator of the moon. 12 miles high, 800 miles long. What the hell is that? What the hell is that? There is no other feature in the solar system like this that I'm aware of. And it bisects the dark region of the moon too. It goes right through the middle of it. And that's not the whole story. Here's the wall. Look at that. It's almost like two halves of an Easter egg put together, that little seam you get in the middle. That's what it looks like to me. NASA won't talk about it much. That line there that I measured is 24 miles long. 24 miles long. Straight line. What's going on with these craters? It's a bloody hexagon. NASA won't talk about it. Richard Hoagland does, fortunately, which is where I stole all these pictures from, although they're on NASA's website. Look at that. Look at it. What the hell is that? Another suggestion of a hexagon here too. It's amazing. It's amazing. NASA won't talk about it. These are from Hoagland's websites. I've knocked Hoagland a lot, but he did a bloody good job on this article that he did called about Iapetus. You can go and read it on his website. It's amazing. Although there is another associated story with this, which I haven't got time to go into here. What the hell's going on with this? Suggestion of looks like it's, if you look at this image, I don't think it's just digital artifacts. Looks like it's built with plates or something. Again, it goes into a lot of detail. I recommended reading this. Can't remember why I put that in, but it's just, again, the light and dark you can see there. Very strange object. What the hell is this? 8 miles high, I think it is. Well, maybe again it's a geodesic construction of some kind. And that's the image that sort of rather knocked me for six. Did George Lucas try and tell us something? Joseph Farrell writes about this in his book, The Cosmic War. Not that I recommend everything of his stuff, but he does write a bit about this apparently. I haven't really read it, but you can go into supposition and conjecture, but that is an uncanny resemblance to me. You know, maybe there's nothing in it, but it's an extraordinary, this wall is so extraordinary. They don't talk about it. Hands up in the audience who's ever heard of Iapetus as an object, as a moon in the solar system. Yeah, about 3 people, like 4 people maybe out of the audience, maybe 5. Now, I've just got a quick video clip, because Richard Hoagland made an interesting observation that what if Iapetus was put there deliberately around Saturn as a spirit, you know, like some people like to go to Tibet or to into the mountains to meditate, to have a spiritual experience somewhere that's very picturesque, very beautiful, very awe-inspiring. Well, how about Iapetus being designed as a place like that? I made a little video using a program called Redshift where you can simulate the view looking at planets from any other planet in the solar system. This is the sort of view you would get if you stood on Titan. I know it's sideways and everything. Looking at Iapetus, I couldn't quite get the angle of view correct. But you can turn that through 90 degrees. And if you stood on Titan looking at Saturn, this is the view you'd get over, you know, several months. You can see the date in the top left corner. I've put this video on YouTube. So you can see the moons, other inner moons orbiting way they go round, round, round. Now you're going to see the view you get from Iapetus. Just imagine seeing that in your sky. The rings open and close, the planets come past, all the other moons are orbiting at different angles. It's a continually changing view. What a place it would be to stand and watch. Now I've got a video of Arthur C. Clarke. I haven't really got time to play it because time's running faster than I expected. Arthur C. Clarke, I'm sure, knew stuff. He originally set a scene in 2001 around Iapetus where David Bowman discovers a monolith. That was actually on Iapetus in the book. But they changed it for the film to Jupiter. Why? Why did Clarke set that? He says he can't remember. If you watch this video, he can't remember. He even did a greeting to mark the 2007 passage next to Iapetus, closest approach. But I haven't got time to play it all. You can get it on the internet, though. So now I just want to finish off very quickly, 5 or 10 minutes. SOHO. What is SOHO? The Solar and Heliospheric Observatory. A lot of these slides, I'm going to quickly go through them. I've got them on my website, though. There's a lot of detail in these, which I won't really have time to go through. They were sent to me by, I'm just giving his initials, he wanted to remain anonymous because he'd done a lot of analysis on these images sent from Germany in 2007, I should change that, he sent them in 2007. So here's NASA's image, sort of promoting SOHO. And the interesting thing is, and I've got to show you one more video clip in a minute, and I'm going to probably finish up with that. SOHO is about 1.5 million kilometres, about 1 million miles from the Earth, in what's called the Lagrangian point L1. The Lagrange point, I can hardly say it, but I do know what it means, is where the gravitational pull between the Earth and the Sun is equal. So you can stick something in that point and it'll stay there. It's a stable position. All right? I'm going to try and show you a video clip because I've got a theory about what I'm going to show you in a few minutes. So it's in a stable orbit, photographing the Sun, week in, week out, all the time. Now, in 2003, UFO magazine featured an article by Mike Murray claiming that they picked up images from SOHO and it was showing these objects. Now, if you look at this, it's got a trail, it's got this purple effect, and it's got this sort of silvery effect in this one. And this got onto the BBC website, and these pictures were displayed at the National Space Centre in Leicester, I learned. I didn't see them there, but I'd never heard of this Mike Murray guy, and he claimed to be of a group, Euroseti. Never heard of them before or since. NASA explains these image anomalies, how to make your own UFO. Data can be interpolated using one of a possible zillion methods, it says. It basically says the images can be faked, so they are fake. In other words, this Mike guy or his friend had faked them. And it goes from an image, a SOHO image, to this. And a lot of these images that they used didn't have dates on them, so you didn't know when they'd been taken. In an interview with UFO magazine, Mr. Murray claimed that their images were from two different satellites, not just SOHO. He said, "We looked at the LASCO satellite, which is pretty much the same orbit as SOHO, but transmits in black and white. But the images were in that one as well. Actually, LASCO is not a separate satellite, but one of the 12 instruments on SOHO." That's correct. So this Mike guy was putting out disinformation. Right? So I knew that was untrue. Because SOHO only has, it's one satellite, but it's got two different cameras on it. C1 and C2, I think, or C2 and C3, I can't remember the numbers. So I think these images were put out early on in 2003. That was the first time I'd heard of them. And then they set up at National Space Center, issued a press release to debunk them. What does a comet look like on SOHO? Get a very short video clip here. This is what comets look like going into the sun, right? So we're going to rule out comets. This is one of the planets, I'm not sure which one. I think we've got a clip of Venus in a minute coming in. Again, that's just the same image repeated again. Got two or three comets. So that's a comet. This is a big one coming through. There's a coronal mass ejection going off. That's what comets look like. So you can see a very distinct sort of appearance. Pretty much as you expect. This isn't taking invisible light. I think this is, I can't remember which area of the spectrum it is. I think it's X-rays, but I'm not sure. And this is another comet. So you can see the sort of thing you get. Fairly typical. So I'll move on. This picture really interested me. What's this object here? Got these two beams coming out of it going directly towards the sun. Now, it was claimed on that BBC article that there could be any filtering. This is direct from NASA's website. I haven't done any filtering. It was originally that image. They moved it now, but you can still access it in an awkward-to-use image catalogue. 2005, it was the 2nd of January at 12:30. Here's an enlargement. What the hell is this? That's a NASA image. Well, I know what it looks like. Again, NASA just say it's a cosmic ray impact or an image artifact. Or they'll say it's one of the planets going past. Oh, really? So why have got these beams coming out of the planet directly towards the sun? How very strange. And this was, I've basically got a load of these now. I'm going to just flick these up for a few seconds each because there's one clip I want to get to finish off. Yes, I've done that. That's that one. There's loads of them. This guy in Germany collected loads of these images. Very strange things. These effects here, beams coming off here, this thing here. He's got all the image dates on them, so you could go and find all these images if you wanted to go and reference them. But it's beam going off in an odd direction rather than left and right. More of them. There's another beam there, another image. Two images overlaid on one another which shouldn't be. What's this effect here coming out? Loads of them. What's this? What do these look like? Structured things. What the hell is going on? Beams coming out again. Objects. He's contrast enhanced these, but he gives you the original image to go and look for them. And these are not planets. He ruled out planets. He goes into a lot of detailed technical explanation in this image. It's on my website if you want to go and look. What's this coming out? More stuff coming out. What the hell is it? It's not shaped like a comet. I think it appears to be moving away from the sun, so what is it? Loads of them. All these beams coming out. No real explanation. He's picked up, he's probably got 100 here, from different dates, different times. Now then, I want to show you this quick video clip, a couple of minutes, and then we're just about done. That's a planet. So as you'll notice, that thing appeared pretty much, it wasn't quite stationary, but in the original unzoomed video it looks stationary. That means it's stationary relative to SOHO, which means perhaps it's in another Lagrange point in a stable orbit. Can anyone say space platform? That's what I think that object could very well be, a cloaked space platform. Now, he doesn't suggest that. I only thought of that after I'd actually watched this a couple of times. That's what I think that is. It's the only thing that explains the evidence, because it's in a stable orbit. But it's view from SOHO over a period of a month, as he said there, changes slightly because of the relative angles of viewing and so on. Okay, now I'll finish up with just a very brief conclusion. Let me give you the whole Mars conspiracy in a nutshell. I have no doubt that there is some real mind-blowing stuff going on Mars, and our governments know it. What they have to do is take the people's minds off Mars, or, you know, SOHO, or I have to substitute that. They send these rovers up there, or probes, and they send back pictures. Oh, heck, got to get rid of that. Oh, heck. That's my thing coming up. I'll just get back to the end of it. Bear with me one moment, and I shall get back. Yep, got it there, I think. Just get that. They send these rovers up there and they send back pictures of basically nothing. The TV and internet are flooded with these pictures of nothing. Soon the people get tired of looking at pictures of nothing and don't want to be bothered with Mars or wherever anymore. They trust that the government will make sure they make them aware of any important happenings on Mars should they occur. Of course, this will never happen. We, the taxpayers, paid for these rovers or whatever. We had a right to know when they were launched and how they landed. We have a right to see the pictures, so they give us millions of pictures of nothing. Now we're so bored with the pictures that we really don't care anymore. They know we won't ask questions anymore for fear of being bored out of our minds. I couldn't have put it better myself. So, yeah, I've got one more clip. Shall I play this, everyone? I think there is disinformation and information in this. NASA were heavily consulted in the making of this film, made by Disney.
of millions of years ago, there was a sudden explosion of life on Earth. The first multi-celled plants and animals appeared. Humans never understood why or how it happened.
So, are NASA telling us that aliens were involved in the creation of life on Earth somehow? Well, I don't know, but it sure looks that way to me, from that film. And I think we've seen some evidence tonight that there is more to the story of the solar system than the academics would have you believe. And it is vastly more intriguing and vastly more inspiring. So I hope that you found that interesting. And you can go and check some of this out for yourself and come up with your own ideas and thoughts. Those are some of the websites I used. I'm going to post this on my website at some point. In fact, I've already put it on SlideShare. So if anybody wants to contact me, you can take a card and I can send them the links or whatever to any of this information. And I'd like to thank you so much for sticking with it, because it's quite late now, and thanks for coming out on a cold and horrible windy evening. And thanks again.
Andrew Johnson. Fantastic, that. Thank you, Andrew.
All right. Thank you.
Doug, your question, maybe? Anybody?
Yes, there's any questions, obviously. If there's any questions, I can take questions. Although it's very late, I know. Any questions? Everyone's totally bamboozled, I think, Rob.
Thanks very much, Andrew.
Okay, thank you very much again. Thank you.
Thank you very much.